This is Garrett Chastain. I'm conducting an oral interview with Butch Revelo. It is April 21st, 2013. 14 is approximately 5:10 p.m. Before we begin with the interview, I wanted to inform you and get your consent. First of all, do you consent to this interview being put on the Texas Tech Vietnam Virtual Archive?
Yes.
Okay. We're at Mr. Revelo's home in Lubbock, Texas. Butch, let's start with some basic, just biographical background information. Tell me a little bit about where you were born, when you were born, and your early childhood years.
I was born in Edinburgh, Texas. And then I never knew Edinburgh, Texas, until my dad brought over to Lubbock, and I grew up in Lubbock. And then from Lubbock, when I was 11 years old, my dad took us to Florida. And in Florida, that's where I enlisted, you know, for the Armed Forces, Army.
When were you born?
December 7th, 1949. Long time ago.
What was your childhood like growing up?
School? Pretty good. So I was in school, and we were a bunch of kids. Then, when I was little, we were around 8 or 9. But by the time they got finished, by the time my dad got finished, we were 12 total.
12 kids?
12 kids.
What kind of work did your dad do?
He was all his life, he was a welder. He died at 59 because all the fumes, I guess, all them years that he inhaled all the flames from the welding and all that. But he was a professional welder.
What was your mom's occupation?
My mom never worked. She just took care of the kids and go to fields once in a while.
Yeah. So, what do you like, Lubbock or Florida better?
I was used to Florida, but now I got used to Lubbock, yeah. Texas.
What was school like for you?
That's pretty good. I liked it to where it got to a point where I'd rather help my dad work because of all the kids and all that. So at the age of 12, I got a school in Florida, and I told my dad, I want to help you work, and I work in the field. He said, okay. You don't want to go to school, and I had to go work in the fields, and I've been working in the field ever since.
So you dropped out of school at 12 years old?
12 years old.
Never finished?
Never finished.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of jobs did you have?
Here and there. Well, when I was growing up, field work. And then after that, when I got 17 or 18 years old, in Florida, there was a lot of construction.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when I volunteered for draft for the Army, and went to the Army 2 years. After 2 years, I met my wife and come back over here, and I've been doing construction ever since.
Tell me about your friends or girlfriends or anything you may have had growing up.
I've had friends and had a bunch of girlfriends. But that's in the past. I met my wife when we were going to church. And then in Florida, I came back over here after I got out of Vietnam. Came over here, looked for her, and found her, got married. And we've been together ever since, 43 years.
That's a long time. Where'd you find her at, here in Lubbock?
In Ralls, Texas, yes.
Okay. What year did you get married?
49. 49? No. I mean, we got married 40. Man, I forgot. It's been so many years ago.
Outside of work, did you play any kind of sports or anything?
No sports. No,
just work.
Work and just, you know, hang around with friends.
Yeah. But whenever you were in school, what kind of things do you remember? Like, what were your favorite subjects? Or
I like math because, you know, it's a challenge.
Yeah.
You know, and now, modern math, or it's a little bit more difficult, but I like math and reading.
Tell me what you remember about the events happening before the war, or at least before you entered, the current events going on at the time.
The war in Vietnam was going on pretty strong. And the reason I volunteered draft, because me and my dad got into an argument, and I put a big puff on him that I was going to go to the Army. He said, yeah, right. And so I applied for draft or volunteer drafts, and without knowing, they took me.
Yeah.
They took me, but I knew it was pretty bad. It was pretty bad then. What? In 68.
They took you in 68?
Yeah.
So what, as far as the government and the things going on in America at the time, what do you remember about, I mean?
Remember of what?
Do you remember anything about the, why we were in Vietnam?
Well, really they didn't discuss much to the GIs. All we had to do was just pack your gear and let's go. But according to news and media, it was because of communists.
Yeah.
Because communists in the United States always try to defend nations that are communists trying to come in and take over. So that's as much as I know about the government.
How did that make you feel? Did that motivate you in any way?
Then I said to myself, well, if in case that's the case about fighting against communism, then I'll go for it. But really, truly, I went into the Army. I wasn't really like other people going to lifers that are called 20 years, mm-hmm. 30 years, 40 years, retired the Army. Right. I just want to get in there and do my time and get out.
Yeah, so you were more motivated through the bet with your dad almost.
Yes.
To go.
Yeah.
So you did volunteer and you went into the Army, correct? Well, what was your highest rank?
E4.
E4?
Yeah, 2 years, E4. And I could have made it more, but then in Vietnam, they'll bump you up to more, but I said, no, I just want to go back to the States.
Yeah.
I just want to go back to the States and get over with, and that's
wanted
it.
To find your wife again.
Go look for somebody.
Yeah. What were your dates of service?
68 and 69. 68 and 69.
That's how long you served in Vietnam?
Yeah, 2 years. Well, the first year in United States, in 68 and in the boot camp and all that, and then 69 in Vietnam.
Okay. Where were you stationed at for your training and everything?
Fort Hood, boot camp, and then Fort Linwood. And my MOS was a generator operator, which I never got to use it. But that was my MOS. When I went to Vietnam, all they put me was guard duty.
Mm-hmm.
No generator operator, nothing.
Okay. Well, what was your initial reaction upon entering the service? So what did you think whenever you were shipped to boot camp?
Well, nervous. As a young kid, as a 17-year-old, 18-year-old, I was nervous. But I said, well, let's go for it, get it over with, and go on.
What did you think of your training at the time?
I liked it. I liked it. It's pretty good. It's tough and rough. It was tough. But I liked it because, you know, all the GIs got good training.
Yeah.
Yes, we have good training for all the kids and all that. But, you know, it's a one-time deal.
Yeah.
It's a one-time deal.
There's a common misconception, I guess, that a lot of people were trying to dodge the draft. Did you have any friends or anything that?
Well, there were a bunch of them. I have a lot of friends that got drafted, and I volunteered draft, and I went through it. And some of my friends they didn't go through it. I mean, you know, they went to Vietnam, and they didn't make it back.
Yeah.
So that was the only problem that I had. You know, a little bit. It didn't bother me much. That some friends in Florida, they were drafted and never did come back.
Mm-hmm. Based on what you saw in training and the things that you've seen in Vietnam, Was it easier for people who enlisted than it was for people who were drafted? Were y'all given the better duties?
No, same thing. It was same. Same.
What kind of things did you see as far as racism?
There were no races. I mean, the drill sergeants and all that, they acted according to each individual, according to how we respond.
Yeah.
You know, and there were people, there were guys, kids that were responded different, so they treat them a little bit different. Mm-hmm. I mean, but if you responded according to what they say, then, you know, that's the way it was. But there were no races at all.
Not even towards the African Americans?
No, they treat us the same.
Yeah.
I mean, if we got it, they got it. So everybody got it.
Did your training in boot camp or for your MOS, did that prepare you in any way for the things that you saw in Vietnam?
No, not really, because my MOS, like I said, my MOS, I never used it. I never used the generator operator. Never did, because all I had in Vietnam was maybe later they might would have put me. But as far as I know, I never got the my MMS working for me.
Yeah. What kind of weapons were you trained on?
In boot camp, in 14, a long rifle, which was taller than me. And then before I went to Vietnam, M16, which was a lot better. Yeah. And that's what I used in Vietnam, M16.
There's also an argument that the AK-47s are better than the M16s. What's your argument or perception on that?
I never tried one of those.
You never shot an AK?
Never have. No? All I shot was M16. M60 and bazooka and grenades. I mean, okay. I never tried AK.
Did any of those weapons you were trained on, did they help you in any way in Vietnam?
Yes, but I never used them. Thank God I never used them on anybody, which was going to be a slap problem if I did, because it would have been worse. But I never used it on nobody. I trained with them, but I never used it on nobody.
So none of those weapons you used in any combat situations?
No.
No?
No.
Did you, other than your MOS generator training, was there any other kind of special training that you had to go through before you went to Vietnam?
Well, before I went to Vietnam in California, I was a week there for combat duty. And they taught me how to shoot, crawl, duck, and you know, defend myself. But other than that, before I went to Vietnam, I never had no training on top of generator operator. Never had any training. All I had just combat training before I went over there and when I got in Vietnam. And to my surprise, I said, why am I getting training in Vietnam? I mean, we're in a combat zone. No. We're in territory which, you know, the enemy territory. Mm-hmm. So why am I getting more training? But it was because for my own sake.
Right.
For every GI's own sake.
Where were you located in Vietnam?
There were different places. Tenan, South Vietnam, Dong Tam, and then back to Tenan, and then Saigon, back to, in Tenan.
Yeah.
9th Infantry Division.
And what division was that?
9th Infantry Division.
19th Infantry.
With a flower. Yeah. It's a flower.
Describe your initial reaction when you arrived overseas.
It was different. It was a totally different atmosphere. Territory is totally different. And according to the United States, like usual, we get to our bunk beds or place, or we just sit around, talk, and they told us that when you leave, we were always armed with the M16. And they said, if something happens, do not leave the M16, your weapon behind. You run with your weapon. And when I arrived in my designated place, around 1 o'clock, 12 o'clock, we were still talking, half nude, talking, writing letters and all that, hearing music. And then everything exploded because I mean, you have no idea or when it's going to, when they're going to hit us, motor coming in. And when that happened, yeah, we just duck or run or what. But if you run, don't leave your weapon behind.
Well, when was the first time that you actually, that it actually dawned on you or occurred to you that I'm in a war now?
After that night.
After the first night.
After the first night.
Yeah.
Because we thought it was, we could hear all the rumbling and the bombing and all that and the flares, lighting. We thought, you know, maybe it was a rain, but lightning, but it wasn't lightning, it was bombs going off all the way around us. And you don't take it for granted until you really feel the impact of a mortar coming in.
Mm-hmm. What? How did you perceive your unit, or how did your unit perceive you whenever you first arrived?
Pretty good. They took care of me and told me where we're going, this and that. And when they take us to our post, we're highly protected with snipers or whatever. Because once you go to your unit, then you will get fired at. And thank God that we didn't get fired at nothing. Going to my unit, we had about 4 snipers with us on the Jeep. Not only me, but on the truck, all of us were with protection. But as long as we got to our unit and we're establishing our place, we got logged in and everything, our name in there and all that. So it's pretty neat because your protection, I felt like a highly qualified federal officer or something, you know, because you're protected. They protect you. They protect you. Good. Go to your unit, and then from there, it's something different.
What was it like the first few weeks overseas? It was a lot of adjusting.
A lot of adjusting because, really, you don't get adjusted. I mean, I think after a year you get adjusted, but I mean, it takes a lot. It takes a lot to get used to because, you know, it's a different atmosphere, different country, and you get shot at.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, anywhere in the mess hall or in the toilet or anywhere, you get shot at. But you get you'll get used to it, but it'll take some time.
Yeah. Well, what did you think of your leadership?
They're pretty good. I'm glad that we got good leadership in the Army, our armed forces, Navy, and anywhere, because they know what they're doing because they're pretty smart. I mean, they're sometimes you think that a short guy is don't know nothing, but they do. They're highly trained to train us and for us to, you know, for our own sake and the country's sake. They're good. They are well trained, well educated, well trained, and everything.
What about your junior officers? How do you feel about those?
Like everything else, in work. I mean, there's one or two that are. You don't get along with.
Right.
But you have to. I mean, we're in a combat area. You have to get along with them. I mean, after that, that's your problem. But, I mean, you have to get along with them.
Well, what did you think of the Mille massacre? I mean, he was also a junior officer. And
I have no comment on that. Because, I don't know what goes through their mind about they getting mad or getting, you know, frustrated about the war or what. But it's not right. I mean, killing for nothing is not right.
Right.
Killing for nothing is not right. And they mess up, that's their deal. Sooner or later, they'll get punished by the government or punished by God. But, I mean, it's not right.
So you never experienced any kind of leadership as far as, like, what Callie portrayed?
No, never have.
Always had upstanding officers.
Good officers, yep. Yeah. Even though as a Hispanic, they treat me right. And because this is what they taught me, they said, we're in here together, and we're going to get out here together.
But did you ever feel at any time that maybe you may not make it home.
Well, you think about that every day.
Yeah.
Every day.
Was there good morale? We're gonna take a quick break. This is Garrett Chastain. We're continuing the interview. Did you take part in any operations?
Guard duty.
Just guard duty.
Yeah, all that time I was in Vietnam, and from Tanan they took me to dog camp, and all of that was guard duty. Guard duty.
So you pretty much just stayed on the base the whole time.
In the base, yes, guarding the base.
What kind of things did you see in the base as far as drug use, alcohol abuse, some stuff like that? I mean,
no, there was a lot of drinking going on. I mean, I never seen so much drinking in the post, and it was, you know, legal. I mean, it's not like here now that you drink a lot, you get arrested. Over there, you don't get arrested for nothing. But there was a lot of drinking in the company base, and which I guess it's, you know, easy up your, you know, calm down your nerves. Or yeah.
Some guys trying to forget things that they saw.
They forget, yeah. Yeah. The good thing about it is that every GI we shared what was going on, and I didn't have much to share. They shared more stuff that it was unbelievable. And I wouldn't share with anybody else because it was their sharing, their life, and I can't say, well, man, he's going through this, but I can't. It's their personal goal, what they going through in Vietnam.
Do you have any good buddies on base?
Well, really, all the GIs are your buddies.
Yeah.
And if you don't like somebody, you just bring them out to the front line and get rid of them. But we never try to do that. I mean, we try to stay together because, like I said, we are in enemy territory. And we never try to make enemies. Yeah. Our enemies were somebody else that fought against us, not United States.
Do you remember some of those stories that your comrades would tell you on base? Is there anything in particular that may stick out?
No, not really, because there's a lot.
Yeah.
There's a lot, and they've gone through a lot that, you know, I don't know if they're still alive, still living. And they're old like me, but no, it's too many, yeah. Too many to count on.
Did you ever see a lot of marijuana usage?
No, very little. I think the only ones I used it was on the ones that were up there in front line, like Green Berets, and they were out there in the middle of the fighting and all that. And,
yeah.
But not much.
Tell me about a typical day in Vietnam. Tell me what it was like on just a day on the base.
In the base, I was guard duty for a whole day, a whole night. It was two guys, 3 hours every 3 hours. And then it was all night and all day. And then they gave us 2 days off to rest and relax. And for them 2 days, and I'd go to the post, in the post, go get my hair cut. And the funny part about it is that in post we had, in the mess hall we had Vietnamese women cleaning the floors, Vietnamese men mopping and cleaning everything after us, which it looked normal, but not right. And then even our barbers, we didn't have local barbers, GI barbers. We had Vietnamese barbers. And one of a situation that everywhere you go, you carry your weapon. Everywhere you go, you carry your weapon. And there was this barber that he started cutting my hair. And then his scissors got too close to my neck. So I just charged my M16 and put it on my shoulder. And he backed off. That was it. The only thing that I've gone through in base. why we had Vietnamese in there cleaning the yard, the grounds and all that, I don't understand. But it was the same Vietnamese that we were fighting against.
Yeah. Were you ever scared to walk in and see those Vietnamese cleaning or cutting hair?
In the beginning, but after that you get used to it. You get used to it, watching them. But you need to be careful with them.
Right.
Because the same Vietnamese that they were inside the base, they go home, and, after 12 o'clock, we had motor coming in. Why exactly certain spots? That I don't understand. But I can say it was him that they're watching it or writing down a little sketch. But we had all them Vietnamese, motor coming in every day, every night, after 12 o'clock. We had motor coming in every night.
What did you think about Vietnam, the war in general?
To a point, I was glad that I served my country. And then to another point that a lot of kids died on it. You know, that died.
What did your parents think about you entering the war?
They were upset with me. They were upset because they didn't think that I was going to make it because since I didn't have no education, since I was just a seventh grade graduate, they didn't think I was going to make it and then that. So really, they didn't think that I was going to the Army. But when they did took me in, then they were scared about me. And they were, in a way, they were happy with me and also scared. And more scared when I got orders to go to Vietnam. And that's when, especially my mom. My dad, he holds all his sentimentals to himself. But my mom, she would cry every night. And I would write her letters every night. And tell her I was fine, I'll be okay. I'm trusting God, and God is with me, and this and that. And she would pray, on the letter, she would make a prayer for me. And I think that's what made it over there.
The letters from home.
It is very encouraging. Letters and even a postcard that even I love you or pray for you, that's a lot. That's a lot. That means a lot to any GI, in any kind of war. You're in the middle of a war, you don't think you're going to make it, and you hear this, they hear that. Any kind of a letter, postcard says, I love you, I pray for you, God's with you. And Jesus loves you. That makes your day. Makes your day.
Well, did you and your buddies, did y'all ever trade letters from home or any goods that might have been sent from home?
No, in Vietnam we never. Now Afghanistan, now they send candy and all that. But in Vietnam they never send no candy or cigarettes. But we did share our letters to each other. Mm-hmm. And encourage. That's one thing what was good about it. We try to encourage each other, because I'm down and this guy comes in and say, hey man, come on, he encouraged me, and then I see somebody else that's down, then I pass it on. We try to encourage each other, because if not, man, you won't make it. You won't make it, because you're gonna think, man, that guy, he don't care about me what, but in the war. When you think that somebody is caring for you, that makes a world of difference.
Yeah. What about pictures? Did y'all ever exchange pictures with each
pictures,
other?
Pictures, and my family and my brothers.
Yeah.
And their family. And there's one Indian guy that guy would cry every night. We felt sorry for him. We tried to encourage him. Try to tell him everything's going to be okay, you're going to make it, and whether he did or not, we don't know. But we try as much, we put ourselves to one side to encourage him. We was having problems, right? We were down, but we tried to encourage him so that he wouldn't see us down, but we encourage him to. But he would cry every night, and then we try to, our best, try to encourage him and not to cry in front of him so he wouldn't feel bad about it. But whether he made it or not, we don't know.
Do you,
Do you still remember his name?
No, I don't. I mean, there's a lot of kids out there that, I mean, a lot of kids that, gosh, I don't know. Okay.
Did the war shape you in any way? Do you think the experience may have turned you into the?
Yeah, you know, in a way, but I think what has built me up, you know, is my parents. Yeah. I mean, the war is something that it's just experience that you go through life. But I think that my mom and my dad, being that my dad was a Baptist preacher, I think he's the one that shaped me. He will encourage me in his own way. I mean, he never told me, but in his own way, got me through. I think that my parents are the ones that got me through. Like a bunch of the GIs, kids that are, their parents have prayed for them and be with them and believing in them and all that. Because, you know, sometimes you think that your buddy is the one that helps you. In the war, that it'll help you when you're fighting against the enemy and you get shot and they help you on fighting. But really and truly, deep down in your heart, in your spirit, I think our parents.
Yeah.
Our parents, our family, and our churches that are, you know, praying for us and all that.
Did y'all ever have any kind of churches or anything on base that you could go to?
They were, but there was a Catholic, not Catholic, but priest,
mm-hmm.
a priest that would pray for us, give us the blessings and all that. And like I said, that was good. But like I say, and I repeat myself, the best blessing that you got anywhere you're at, anywhere, in enemy territory, working at the house, is your parents' blessing. That's the best blessing you can get from anybody.
So the letters from home is what you remember most?
They encourage me a lot. Especially my sister, because my dad couldn't write, my mama couldn't write, because my mom came from Monterrey, Mexico, and they couldn't write, so my sister, Mary, she's the one that write to me and tell me what my dad said, what my mom said, and that would be encouraging.
Is there anything that you would change about your experience in Vietnam?
No, I can't change it because, you know, it's there and it's in me. And I'm glad I went. Came back. Thank God that I came back because of my prayers and all that. And my experience that I've gone through, I mean, I'm not going to say that they haunt me. I'm like a bunch of GIs, a lot of kids that they haunt them for like crazy. But they don't haunt me, but it serves me as an experience. Now as an adult, you know, it serves me to live better and to treat my kids better. And if my kids, grandkids, grandkids, they go to armed forces, I can encourage them, you know, for not that they're going to be pulled away from war or nothing, but I can encourage them the way my parents did.
Tell me about the overall landscape of Vietnam. I mean, you said that you stayed at the base most of the time, but is it pretty mountainous and jungle?
Well, no, not where I was stationed at, because really everything was blown away. I mean, it was like level. No trees, flat. Because, of course, there's spots in Vietnam that I went through, and there were jungles and all that. But when I was stationed at Dong Tam, it was, it was flat, nothing, no trees, because of all the bombing and all that. And Vietnam is a beautiful place. It's a beautiful place and beautiful people. They just didn't know how to react and stuff like that. And the bad thing about it is that they had communists coming in,
yeah.
And that's who I was fighting with. But they, Vietnamese people are beautiful people. Beautiful people. They were friendly with you, courteous with you, and all that. And I would say, I'll ask myself, why we find these people? I mean, they have no, but it wasn't them what they were fighting with. We were fighting with against communism. And communism would try to take over all them. And beautiful people, mothers, daddies, grandpas, kids, beautiful, beautiful people.
Did you ever try any of the local cuisine there?
Who?
The local cuisine, the food?
Well, I was warned not to eat, drink the water and the food, but I tried anyway. And it wasn't that bad. It was pretty good. Yeah, pretty good.
Have you ever been back to Vietnam since the war?
No. I have seen programs that a bunch of these citizens has gone back.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to go back. I would like to go back and see mine. The thing about it is that when I left Vietnam, they took me back. They brought me back to Air Force in Tampa. They brought me back to for my last 30 days. I got back to the States in Tampa, and then I went for all my luggage and all that. My luggage never come back, so. Call them, this and that. It took about 2-3 months to find my luggage, and they said my luggage never made it to the United States. The reason is because when I left that post, my barracks got blown up. So I never got my picture back, my 8-track. We had 8-track then. And all my songs and all that, I never got my clothes. Pictures, camera, I never got back because it got blown up. And, it was a good experience that helps him now.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't, it has not discouraged me or nothing. I mean, I'm glad I was in it to serve my country, even though it was 2 years. I served my country like other people have served 20 years. But I was glad. I was glad that I was in it.
How long after you left was it that your barracks got destroyed?
About a couple of weeks after I come back to the United States, it got blown up.
Yeah.
And they couldn't find none of my belongings. That's why it took them a long time. Even my records, I left my records behind. They sent some records, so they had to go through all the records. When I enlisted for a VA clinic, VA hospital, they had to go through all the, again, the honorable discharge papers and all the medical papers and all that to apply me, to qualify.
Well, it gets pretty hot over there, right?
Like Florida, hot and humid. Like crazy.
What did you think of the uniforms that you had to wear, your fatigues? Were they suited for
you? Yeah, they're pretty strong. They're pretty heavy. They're pretty heavy because we had to take off a shirt to make it, you wouldn't make it. It was hot and humid.
This may be an odd question, but how did Playboy magazine play a role that you remember in Vietnam or just the base camp? I mean,
they had them. Yeah, we had them. And Playboy magazine, Not like today. Now it's totally nude. I mean, they were half nude, but we had them.
Yeah. Did they seem to help some of you guys out?
Not really, because you start drinking and screaming all that, and look at this babe. Not really. I mean, sexually, not really, because it was only a no, picture.
Yeah.
It's only a picture.
How do you think movies or Hollywood, what do you think about the way that they portrayed Vietnam? Did they get anything right? Were they consistent?
No, I think they overdo it.
Yeah.
They overdo it because it's not as, it's not as what they show in the movies, because Vietnam totally different. Unless you were in Vietnam and saw the totally war, fighting and shooting and seeing your buddies can kill. Some do it. Some are close to it, but not really. I mean, you have to be there. Whoever starts a movie, that person has to be there to see how exactly happened. I mean, you get shot, you get blown up, you get legs blown off your body. But I mean, some are close. And the reason because I say that because like I said, I never was in front line with all the action was going on. But the Green Berets, they were, according to them, it was bad.
Yeah.
It was bad.
Do you think the United States learned anything from Vietnam?
Oh, I hope so. I hope so. If not, then we're in trouble. I mean, here we are at war again, and with Afghanistan and this and that. And Afghanistan has nothing on Vietnam. Has nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know what? What has come to my my attention is that some of these GIs come from Afghanistan. And of course, I believe it was a bad war. It's a bad war, but they come back. They give them a parade, give them a honor salute, and all these. They come back from Afghanistan. But what happened to Vietnam? I mean, there were thousands and thousands of kids that got killed in Vietnam. What happened to all the parades? All the salutes to all the GIs that came from Vietnam. So far, I haven't seen nothing.
Yeah.
And this is what put me down. And I try to put it behind and just go on, because Vietnam was a bad war. It was a bad war. To all the kids that lost their lives, all the kids that lost half their bodies, I mean, literally half their bodies. I mean, they never got a salute. They never got a hooray for them, nothing. You know, they just come back and disability and go on.
So what do you think about the anti-war movement? I mean, just like you said, y'all didn't get any parades, and that must have been hard coming home.
It's different. It's different. And when I see all these parades and honorary for these guys coming in from overseas and all that, really, truly, I'll get mad. Either I'll get mad or walk away. I don't want to get mad from my wife and say something I'm supposed to. So sometimes I just walk away.
Yeah.
Because it was hell there in Vietnam. It was hell. I mean, like I said, I was never in the front line. But I've heard kids, I'm talking about 18, 19, 20-year-olds, talk about what they've gone through. And then they got orders to go in the village and shoot all the enemy, and all the enemy was not there. That's when they shoot women, kids, and, and one or two of them might say, "It's all right, nothing wrong with that. We got orders." But the majority of them, they felt bad about that.
Yeah.
I mean, and I believe it bothered them for the rest of their life. I mean, if they ain't dead, they're living, it still bothers them. I don't care if they get doctor, psychiatrist, whatever, it still bothers them. If they're still alive, it still bothers them, because what they've done because of certain orders. And that's what, that's the only thing about, like I say, I've never been in the front line, but I can feel for them kids. I can feel, a bunch of these kids that's commit suicide in the middle age, or maybe as a senior, because it goes through all their mind, and especially when you start talking to somebody that's going through what you've gone through, it's worse, it's bad. So that's where the psychiatrists come in, try to ease you up, and maybe that's why much of these kids commit suicide or commit bombs, or I don't know. It's hard on them. It's hard on them, and If anybody can go into a mind and see what they're going through, then only is God himself. And if they don't turn to God, then they're in trouble. I mean, they commit suicide, they do something crazy.
Well, what's it like for you to interact with other Vietnam veterans?
I would like to, but it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard because after 30 years, it's still hard. You never forget. You know, just like a kid that son, daughter that dies, you never forget them. You never forget. And something like that, you never forget. And if counseling with 4, 5, 10 guys around, you know, talking to each other, you know, it's sensitive and it's hard, but it'll help some for now. But, you know, I mean, it's in you. You can't blow it away. You can't take it off like you change clothes. You can't. It's impossible. Because it's in there and can't let it go. You can't let it go.
If you're comfortable talking about it, are there any disabilities that you have due to Vietnam?
No, not really. But about... I mean, the VA clinic, VA hospital, and they talk to me, and we talk and all that, but, you know, I have no disabilities, talk with nobody, the doctors or contract at the hospital, but I think it would be hard if I was to talk to a GI that went through that. That's when it's hard. I mean, these doctors, some has gone real lightly in their comeback, these... OJT, what they call them, on the job training, which they don't know nothing.
Well, that concludes my questions for this interview. Looking back through the interview, is there anything else that you might like to add, something you want the listeners to know?
No, not really. Only one experience that was weird. I can never forget about that experience. That when my earlobe got infected, I don't know how it got infected, but it became swollen like a little ball hanging on my earlobe. So I went to a medic and I was waiting there and all that. And then he said, okay, well, let's cut you open because I think it's infected. So he cut it open. And as soon as he cut it open, he sprayed nothing. I mean, no dead. Nothing. He didn't detonate or nothing. He just cut it open. He said, hold that. And then all of a sudden, we heard Huey coming in with a wounded and killed and all that. So he said, hold that. So I held my earlobe and all that. And then the Huey came in, unloaded the injured and the dead. And I was looking at, he left the door open, or the screen open. And they brought in some guys, you know, that were blown up. I mean, half their face blown off, half their belly, their intestines blown out. And I said, golly, here I am worrying about my earlobe that's infected. And these poor kids are coming in with half their body blown off. What is wrong with me? So I just walked up and walked away. So they're more important. And they said, where are you going? I'm going to my barracks. Why? No. Take care of them. They're more important than I am. And you know, and now, I got my earlobe and pressed it together and everything came out. So you see, that's only earlobe. But what about them kids that came in, you know? Mm-hmm. That's the only experience that I had that, sometimes I'm wishing that them kids made it. And if they didn't, you know, hope they're in heaven right now.
Thank you for allowing me to interview you, Mr. Arevalo. I sincerely appreciate it.
Thank you.